to the film that made Uggie a household name. 2011's The Artist, from writer-director Michel Hazanavicius, made a splash when it premiered at the Cannes Film Festival, with lead actor Jean Dujardin taking home Best Actor and Uggie winning the Palme d'Or. Soon, the black-and-white silent film became the one everyone was talking about for Oscar buzz that year, and Uggie became a sensation, appearing on late-night TV and in movie line editors S.T. Van Arsdale's Consider Uggie Oscar campaign, for which this podcast is named for. Even Hazanavicius recognized how important Uggie was to the film. In Uggie's biography, he said, "The main character, George, is not so sympathetic, and he makes a lot of mistakes. But the dog follows him, whatever happens. People trust the dog, so you begin to accept the main character because of the dog." Unfortunately, BAFTA and the Academy didn't accept poor Uggie. The British Academy of Film and Television Arts responded, "Regretfully, we must advise that as he is not a human being, and as his unique motivation as an actor was sausages, Uggie is not qualified to compete for the BAFTA in this category." This was after a number of members had contacted BAFTA to find out if they were allowed to vote for Uggie for Best Actor. The Artist would go on to win 5 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Director, Actor, Costumes, and Score. Would this Oscar winner win without Uggie? What's up Doris's butt in the movie? And would a better title for this film be Look Who's Talking Now? All this and more in episode 7 of the Consider Uggie podcast, where my awards daily colleague Joey Moser and I, Megan McLaughlin, discuss the filmography of Uggie the dog and his impact on popular culture. Hi, Joey. How are you?
Hi. I'm a little obsessed with that introduction.
I'm glad you like it. So much to talk about with this. I want to say, you know, from the opening of this film, let's take a trip to the past with the Weinstein logo. A time when we all thought it was safe to have a potted plant and a young actress in the vicinity of Harvey Weinstein. I thought that was like, as soon as I saw the logo, I was like, I gasped because I had not seen a Weinstein logo in so long. Like,
That was, I had like a vocal reaction. Like
I did too.
On.
Yeah.
I was like,
This was my first time seeing it since we saw it together.
Me too.
Was this your first time seeing it since then too?
Yes, because I don't really like this movie.
I don't either. So here's the thing. I appreciate this film. This film is kind of, this to me is like, I remember going to see this in the theater. First of all, so our story behind this is that when we went to see it, we were the only people in the theater, but there was this one bigoted woman who would not stop talking the whole time. She had just seen a documentary, like an LGBTQ documentary that came out that year. Because I remember her talking about it with you, and I was trying to figure out what documentary it was. But didn't she say something like derogatory or something? And you were like, okay.
I don't think it was. I might have been How to Survive a Plague, but I don't think that was. I gotta figure out when. Let's see if it was nominated the same year. No, it was. I think what she said was something along the lines of, like, why are these homos complaining? Like, something in the documentary she did not like. I think she did not like it that it was focused on gay people, and I was just sort of like, I am clearly a homosexual. I'm at like, we're at like a 9 o'clock showing on a Friday of The Artist, and I feel like we saw another movie right before it too, because
did we? People who,
we might have, let me consult the book.
This was a big deal. I just remember that the hype for this was so much that I was so excited for this.
Me too. Because
I was like, oh, I love old fashioned movies. And I mean, we can get into more to what I don't like about it, because there was a lot that I, having watched it, I appreciated it so much more this time, maybe because I was removed from the hype and I felt like, oh, I was appreciating it after like not remembering a lot of it. I also had in my notes, this is when John Goodman was in everything. when he showed up, I was like, oh, right. I forgot that he was in this. I think, I guess a little bit, kind of from my notes, what I had written down is this is basically a ripoff of a lot of films. I think that was my first thing that,
like,
the impression.
Singing
in the Rain, A Star Is Born, you could even argue, because she is moving up and he's moving down, which I also like that I read a trivia about this. Well, actually, in Uggie's biography, he talked about how in the film, George is always coming down the stairs when he's never seen going upstairs. And she, Peppy, is always seen going up the stairs. I thought that was really interesting.
That is interesting.
I even like there are scenes like the scene where they're in the restaurant and she's being interviewed and he's at dinner. Like that's like such a You've Got Mail ripoff where their chairs are back to back. And then I also I wrote down like everything Charlie Chaplin has ever done is a ripoff from this. And then even the end shot, like this part where he like gets a gun, he's going to blow his brains out. I'm like, this reminds me of The Room, you know? Yeah. So this film is ripping off a lot of things. And I think that's probably my impression at the time was I was hoping that this would be, I remember leaving the theater and thinking, I wish there was something more to it. Like, I wish it had taken this like pretty like basic plot that you've seen in a lot of movies and then put some sort of modern twist on it. Like, maybe there was a reason he didn't want to be speaking on film. Maybe he,
I thought it was because he was French.
That's what I thought too. Is that why?
Well, I mean, after I watched the movie, I just like read through just the Wikipedia page of it. And, I think they say at the very end of the, description. Hold on, let me get the exact wording on Wikipedia. It says, says the director says, "Perfect, beautiful. Could you give me one more?" Valentine, in his only audible line, replies, "With pleasure," revealing a French accent.
Yes, that's what I noticed that this time, and I thought, well, then they could have played with like that a bit more. I don't know, just do something different because this just felt like, I mean, it's beautifully done. Uggie is amazing. Uggie is all through this film too, which is great. Yeah. And I can see why. More on his performance soon, but I just feel like it needed something more. It needed like, what do they call, like a third heat or something. It needed something else because it was basically just following a formula and not saying anything that maybe that was its point. I don't know. It kind of made me think of La La Land too, where I was so hyped up to see La La Land and then I went to see it and I'm like, that's it.
Yeah.
That's all you got. Like, maybe I need to remove the hype from movies. That's very hard.
It's kind of hard with movies like this for people. Like, this isn't a knock for people who like live in LA or part of the business or something. But like, I remember thinking that the sort of the same thing that you just said about La La Land and The Artist. So I was like, oh, I just don't fully understand this experience.
Right. And I mean, I guess that was my problem with La La Land was that, like, you know, they're making Emma Stone's character out to be this struggling actress that drives a Prius. Like, give her some sort of character where she's driving a shitty car. I mean, I know she's living with a bunch of people, but like, it just seems like her life was pretty awesome. Show me the struggle.
She has enough and then can go back to her parents' house.
Yes, and she's such a movie buff that she's never seen like classic movies. I don't know. It's just none of her character made sense, and you could tell it was written by a dude. But that's a different conversation. This is a charming film. Like it really is. I actually was I called my mom after and I said, you know, I think you should see this film. She's like, but you don't like it. I'm like, but I think that it's fine for what it is. I think because there was so much Oscar buzz that made me look at it differently, which I know Clarence, we've talked about it with Clarence before too, how even with La La Land, like if you separate the Oscar buzz from it, then you just like it, you know? And I feel like this is a film that you would just like. It's just interesting to see why did it win that year? I don't know, but that, maybe we can analyze that too, but I'm not quite sure, like, the characters in it, like, I mentioned at the top of the podcast, like, so Penelope Ann Miller plays George's wife, Jean Dujardin's wife, and I don't understand why. So the story, for people who don't know, George is this silent movie actor who's, looks kind of reminds me of Cary Grant throughout the whole thing, I don't know why, like a French Cary Grant, and he's just on top of the world. His wife hates him for some reason. And then the talkies start, and then George is like, I'm not doing that shit. And then Pepe starts moving up in the world, and George starts tanking because he can't evolve, which I had also written down in my notes. Evolve, George, evolve. But like, so his wife Doris hates him for some reason. And like, what is her deal? I just don't understand, other than she's jealous when he's pictured with Pepe in the paper, even though that was just like a cute photo. Like, I don't know what her deal is.
I think it's literally because he gives the dog so much attention.
By the way, Penelope Ann Miller was married to Will Arnett for like a month in 1994. And I think that's such an interesting.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Every time I see her, I'm like, you were married to Job. But and also a fun fact about the scene where she throws the newspaper at Uggy, which I was like, bitch, you do not do that.
How dare you? Now as a dog owner, I was very upset.
Right. Did you know that there were three dogs in this film and that Uggy was not the only one?
Oh my God.
In that scene, Uggy was causing such a, like, he was having such a reaction that he was angry that they had to bring in Dude, the other dog. Oh, speaking of dogs, he's very upset about this.
He was barking the whole time we were watching, that I was watching. I'm serious, so I apologize. He's probably going to bark a lot more. I can't get him to stop.
That's okay. Anyway, they brought in Dude the dog to do that scene because Uggy couldn't. Because he was just getting too upset.
Yeah,
the other dog was Dash, who was like kind of his brother, who kind of looked, which is funny because there were some dogs that I was like, does Uggy have spots on his back like that? Like, I don't know if you noticed, am I becoming crazy about this dog? Because I was like, I've never noticed those spots on him before.
We are 7 episodes in.
I know. And I'm like, of course, there was Uggy, Dash, and Dude who were in this. But one thing I do want to say about the film that I appreciated was Berenice Bejo. That's how you say her name, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. First of all, she needs to be in more. I miss her. I love this actress. And Pepe is kind of a feminist icon, I think, because she's, you know, moving up. Doing her thing, fucking dudes left and right. Like, I like the part where she's going up the stairs and she runs into George and he's like, who are those guys? She's like, toys.
None of your business, George.
Right. I was like, that's great. Like, because I will say another film like this would have been like, and then she gets married, you know, and then she has children, you know. But this one, she's just like, I'm having a good time. And I also like that one guy that she dates who looks like a California Dreams band reject. I was like,
I
love
this? That guy. I was just like, oh, who was that man?
Yeah. Liked him?
I just thought he was cute, though.
He was very forgettable. But I also wonder, though, do you think those guys that they all appeared to be kind of gay? What if she just was like, is she kind of like a Judy Garland? Are you a friend of Pepe?
Oh, we gotta make that a thing.
Yeah. Are you a friend of Pepe? Yeah.
I love that.
But I also think this film, though, like, at the same time that it makes her a feminist icon, like, during that dinner scene where she's being interviewed about, you know, talkies, and George just happens to be there listening in on her conversation, and she basically says, like, who would want to do a silent film? And he's all, like, he's all offended by it. Yeah. Like, she still has to apologize for having an opinion about it. Like, I felt like that was a weird scene that, you know, this film very much makes it so we're supposed to be. I mean, well, I guess even though Son of Ishu said that George is an unlikable character in some ways, but I feel like we're always kind of with him and we're sensitive to him. Whereas in this, I feel like Pepe didn't need to apologize for having an opinion about talkies.
I do also think the one thing that stood out to me was towards the end, not to jump to the end, but like towards the end when it looks like he's going to kill himself and she's just like, no, and she jumps in the car. Like, I understand, like, cars, not everybody drove at this point. What, 1932? But like the part, like when they show Pepe driving, it is like the wildest, like, it's a woman behind the wheel. She's emotional. It actually reminded me of that skit from 30 Rock where she's just like Amelia Earhart's driving a plane. She's like, uh-oh, I got my period. And she, like, crashes the plane. Like, it's just sort of,
oh,
just like,
right.
She's hysterical. She cannot possibly drive a car. That's what I thought of the entire time. I was like, all right, Hazanavi Shoes, whatever the fuck your name is. Son of a this is, and that's his wife, for God's sake.
I know. I also like, though, whenever she runs off and they're like, she's like, Clifton, everybody's looking for Clifton to drive her. And then she's just like, I'll fucking do it myself. And Clifton comes running out. I'm like, he was in the outhouse shitter for the help. Like, probably. Like, he was probably taking a dump. Like, give him a break.
Clifton. Clifton.
Clifton.
Clifton.
Also, I like the part where, like, I wrote down, like, George would so be canceled because he's like, Clifton, when was the last time I paid you? A year ago. Like, can you imagine?
Yeah. Get on Twitter and just be like, he doesn't.
He like, doesn't even man, pay his he help. He doesn't
pay his people.
But okay, so let's talk about Uggie's performance. I, you know, from the, he is in it from the very beginning.
Oh.
And it's just like, oh, thank God. We don't, you know, usually I like, Uggie's like a Where's Waldo in a lot of these films. Like, when is he going to come? But, in this, he's all through it. I think one of his best scenes is the fire scene where George, like lights everything on fire because he's angry and jealous about, you know, where his life is going just because he won't do talky pictures. And
you at least try, George.
Right, like, at least try. And then so the firemen rescue him. They take him out. And as they're carrying him out, you know, Uggie is right there with him. And Uggie does, like, some very fine work where he's walking almost in and out of their legs, like, or maybe, I mean, I think it is Uggie, unless it's Dash or Dude, but I believe Uggie would be called in to do this scene. And he's, like, weaving in and out, and he's very concerned. And I was like, that is so exceptional. Like, that is exceptional work for a dog. And that's where I'm like, okay, I get why I consider Uggie was a thing, because it's just very, it's very compelling, and it doesn't seem like he's being led with sausages, I thought.
I am I'm surprised that that was the, you know, he's led with sausages, whatever, what, fuck you. He's so good in this. You can tell he's, I mean, if you want to put comparisons to it, I mean, he's sort of, this is his Pepe moment, really. Because, like, if you think about it, he's kind of like Pepe. Like, this is his big up-and-coming moment in a movie that's sort of about Pepe. And
that's true.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is like, I knew, like, getting into it, like, anything that he, anytime that he was on screen where he was, like, running or doing a trick when they do the bang trick and he falls over and stuff like that, I was just like, I know that he worked really hard because I've seen the work. You don't watch, oh, God, Life is Rough and not see the connection between Life is Rough and the artist.
That's true.
I'm just throwing that out
there. He's come such a long way. I do think it's funny, though. I was thinking about how I was writing down, like, so Uggie's in every, well, the dog, as he's known in this, is in every one of George's films, which is kind of weird. It's kind of like he's a crutch for George. I think it's weird that he's in every movie and that he even takes him to the movie theater with him.
I thought that was so funny. I was like, my dog and I would get kicked out so fast.
Maybe he was like,
no one bats an eye. He's just like,
maybe he was an emotional support animal. Like, maybe this was an early emotional support animal.
Dogs.
But do you think that Uggie's a crutch for this movie, too? What do you think the film looks like without Uggie in this movie?
What a good question. Well, I feel like you wouldn't get, they would have to change, like, the sort of release at the end of the movie. You know, when there's a, like, tense moment between Pepe and George. Like, what else would they do?
And he might just kill himself because Uggie's barking his balls off. Like, don't do it. Don't do it.
Don't do it. I felt so bad. Like, I was like, whatever. You know, I was just like, your poor dog.
He's probably like, don't do it. I'll be forced to eat your dead body.
Like, that's not good for me. I don't want to do it. George, you're very good looking, but no.
Yeah. George is incredibly selfish because why would you kill yourself? And who's going to take care of that dog?
That poor dog.
Whoever
takes over taking care of that dog, he's not going to know his talents. They're going to, like, fucking push him away, and he's going to be like, but I go to the, like, they're going to be like, we're going to the movies, and be like, great. And then they, like, close the door in his face. He's like, but I go to the movies, too.
They'll sit him outside and, like, chain him to like, a parking meter or something. Ugh, those kind of idiots.
Fucking assholes.
Yeah. But I was kind of like, George, you're terrible. Like, this dog wants you to live. And that is such a great scene, too, where he's just barking like, I mean, you can't hear him, but you definitely, you know, get the urgency. And I really was impressed with Uggie again and like having the space away from this and seeing him, his progression of his career through this experiment that we're doing. He's definitely come a long way. I also wrote down in my, I also like the part where the cop that looks like old Jesse Plemons is just like sitting around doing nothing. And Uggie comes up to him and is like, help me. And he's just like, looks at him. And I wrote, typical cop doesn't believe dog. But I have more on that. I want to say something about some of my issues with the film, and the cop has something to do with it. But so George, let's talk about George's issues though, other than, you know, so he won't evolve. So we think maybe he's reluctant to do talkies because he's French, but which is never really explored in any of the subtext of the film or anything. But his movies are not that good, I don't think. Like the scene where he's in the like his last big film where he's falling in the quicksand. Farewell, Norma. I never loved you.
I know. What?
What a terrible final line.
Maybe it's just like George doesn't know how to write.
Yeah, I was so perplexed by that. Like, I never loved you, but I mean, are we supposed to be laughing? Because it's really funny.
No, I think that's, George is an idiot. Maybe he's kind of like the Derek Zoolander of the silent film era.
He can't turn left.
Yes. Have you seen him turn left?
That's true. He can only go downstairs. He can't go up.
Yep. Has to carry his dog with him everywhere.
I mean, even Uggie is in that scene watching George die. It's so wrong.
Do you think Uggie was just like, I think I need to be in the scene to add some agency and some urgency? And he's like, oh, probably.
Yeah, because he's just barking again. Maybe he thought that when he was going to try to kill himself, that it was all part of like another weird scene and he was just acting. Maybe Uggie actually didn't care. But I tend to think he did.
Now, maybe we need to like track down Jean Dujardin and be like, what was it like working with Uggie? And maybe I would love to do that. I'm just totally serious.
Jean Dujardin is not an animal lover. So that was kind of the thing that that was like the thing that they were worried about, because Uggie was a little nervous because he didn't know, like according to his autobiography, he was nervous about working with him because he wasn't like a dog person or an animal person. So, but they got along swimmingly and ended up being fine. But I know that was something that they were worried about.
I'm seeing so many pictures of Jean Dujardin, Uggie, and Jean Dujardin's Oscar. Like I have a picture of Uggie, like trying to eat Jean Dujardin's nose.
Who else was? Oh, that is a famous image. Who else was up that year? I can't remember.
That was what, 2011?
Yeah.
That was the year that blah 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 blah. Oh God, why am I forgetting his name? I interviewed him. Oh my God. For The Life, A Better Life. Oh my God, what the fuck is his name? Damien Bashir. Damien Bashir for A Better Life. George Clooney, The Descendants. Gary Oldman for Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, which is his first Oscar nomination, and Brad Pitt for Moneyball.
Oh, see, I would argue that Jean Dujardin does not win if Uggie is not in the film. And I think probably, it would go to Brad Pitt for Moneyball.
Ugh, I love Brad Pitt for Moneyball. I'd be totally fine with that.
Yeah, because that was such a good role, too. That was like I just really liked that part. I think Uggie is very crucial to the film, and I think that they knew that, and they leaned in hard on it, and I respect them for it. I like that S.T. Van Airesdale, though, said that, like, Uggie was better than most of the actors that year, but not as good as George Clooney in The Descendants, which I thought was really funny.
Well, he didn't want to insult George Clooney. I mean, Uggie probably wanted to work with George Clooney, so.
Yes, that's true. Uggie also gets the last laugh because this is the year that Beginners comes out, and he was up for the role in that film, and it ultimately went to Cosmo. And I don't see Cosmo winning a Palme d'Or, Even though I think Cosmo is very good in that film.
Is Cosmo like, you know, Glenn? Is Cosmo, I can't formulate the sentence right. Is Cosmo Uggie's Olivia Colman to Uggie's Glenn Close?
I don't know because I would say that Uggie's Olivia Colman, Glenn Close is Cosmo. Is that what you're saying? Or the other way around?
Other way around.
Oh, but Uggie won awards. Oh, that sounds so mean. I love Glenn Close. But like Uggie was really devastated that he didn't get Beginners. So it's just interesting how two big dog films came out that year and they both like went head to head with it.
Was Beginners that year too?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, Christopher Plummer won for Best Supporting Actor that year.
Oh, I didn't think it was that. Why do I think Beginners was so fudge? Like a couple years later. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, the same year.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, this is a big year for dogs in general. Just thinking about like Bridesmaids has that like dog scene and like, you know, there are a lot of dogs running around this Oscar season. But yeah, I forget we went off track. But yeah, we just started talking about Uggie. I wrote down some other quotes about that, things that I liked from the movie, that the public wants fresh meat and the public is never wrong. I don't know why that made me laugh.
I know. I was like, oh my God, it's Twitter.
That's so true. Yeah.
I was just like, oh no.
But I guess I did want to talk about, so a little bit more about my main issues with the film. So like, as I said earlier, there's no real update on the genre. Like, although I do find it interesting that they shot it in color, then changed it to black and white, as opposed to like Mank, where they specifically did everything so that it would be in black and white, which I thought was interesting. That's just interesting to me. But they, you know, but we still have mostly white people in this film. Like, not saying that, I don't know, it just feels like, you know, do something different, make it a little more diverse, you know. They don't really do anything other than, I mean, maybe they're just trying to capture old Hollywood, but I don't know, do something different. Like, I remember when, after I saw it, I wanted George to be deaf or something, or that to be something that he would, or like something, or that he couldn't speak or something, like, and that's why he couldn't, or maybe he had a stutter. But then the King's Speech had just come out a year earlier. So, but I wanted something like something to happen, something else other than just his pride.
Well, it's sort of like he doesn't try, to be perfectly honest.
Right.
You know, his pride does get in the way, but I think it would have been so much more interesting if there was some legitimate weight there, other than just like, I don't want to do it. I like what I'm doing now. It's sort of, in sort of retrospect, through a 2020 lens, this movie's only, what, like, 10 years old?
Yeah, 10 years old.
It's sort of just like, all right, you're just a bitch, George. Why are you such a bitch? It's like, no wonder white straight men got to run everything, because they were just little bitches all the time.
Really? Maybe this should have been called Little Bitches.
The Little Bitch Artist.
The Little Bitch Artist. I love that idea. One of my other... Okay, so the other thing that makes me laugh in silent films is like whenever you don't know what somebody's saying and they just go on for a while and then they'll have them, the screen will come up and they'll be like, hey, like something like that. But the part where old man Jesse Plemons the cop is talking to him toward the end of the film when he's like walking around downtown and he says something to him about his house, he goes on for a while and you're like waiting, like, okay, what is he saying? Hey, but you don't know what he says. And then it just causes him to run back to his house. Yeah. What do you think he said to him?
The cop?
Yeah.
I honestly don't know, because I actually wondered that too, because I was just like, all right, I thought he was gonna be like, oh wow, you're trying to tell me something, let's go, or I don't know, it was just like nothing.
Maybe he says something like, hey, saw your house got fucked up, you know, you can go in now.
If you were stopped being a little bitch, you could probably make some movies and make some money and rebuild it faster. Oh, you're just being a little bitch.
I think your gun's still in there too, by the way.
Like, oh, is this yours?
I think it's hidden by the wherever he hid it and pulled it out. Yeah. Go kill yourself. Maybe that's what he says.
I think it'd be better if the cop was like, do you have a permit for that gun? What if you made the artist through, like, it was just like, all right, gun control's a hot button issue. Let's include it.
The other thing I did like about the film were the distracting cameos. Starting with Malcolm McDowell, fresh off
there
the set
so
of Franklin
many...
and Bash, is what I assumed.
There are so many, like, more famous people in here than I remember.
Yeah. Missy Pyle, I thought, had a bigger part in it, and she doesn't.
Me too.
And I'm kind of sad that she doesn't, because I really like
love
her.
Missy Pyle.
Yeah. She's, like, and she's perfect for this kind of film. Like, she looked like a girl of the time, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I can't wait to see more of her. And then I'm like, oh, that's right. This is all we see of her. But I thought Malcolm McDowell was in it more, too. And I'm like, that's it? He gets billing in the film. Like, at the top of the, like... when they have the artist and who it stars, he's, like, at the top of the list. He's in one scene where he just kind of nods at Pepe. And then she goes, I'm Pepe Miller. You remember that name.
That's how he's like, I nah.
The other thing that was controversial about this film was the Kim Novak controversy. So she spoke out against this film because they borrowed music from Vertigo. And I think she, like, even said they, like, raped her career.
Yeah, she used the word rape.
Yes.
I was like, okay, all right, Kim. Like, okay, yeah. I'm gonna throw that word around.
Which is funny, not that that's a funny term, but it's funny that they use the recycle music because, I mean, are we surprised since they recycle plot lines? I guess not. But the whole time I'm like, this music is amazing. How do I know this?
Is the music went right when he's going to kill himself? Like the big sweeping, it's the big dramatic part near the end, right?
I think so. I think that is it. Yeah. But I guess it's interesting that they were able to weave in. I mean, this one best score, they wouldn't have given to it if it didn't have anything original. So I think it does have original elements that, so maybe that's, it's very, there's creativity and talent there that they were able to, you know, play on like modern music using their own thing and then also borrowing from past films, which, I mean, look at Promising Young Woman does that with Toxic and how many other, like, TV shows and films right now have a creepy girl talking in the beginning, singing a classic song like California Dreaming.
Is that like I feel like one of your least favorite things in movie trailers?
Yes, that is like... my least favorite thing in movie trailers. If it's a horror film, it's going to have a like little girl singing classic song scarily.
What's the name? Oh gosh, The Last House on the Left. The remake of The Last House on the Left. The Last House on the Left, from, like, 2009, they did a Sweet Child of Mine. And I actually got so obsessed with that cover of it that I downloaded it. I bought it. I didn't, like, I went on to iTunes and I bought it. And
I am ashamed of you right now. I was thinking of, like, the time period where, what's her name? Something Browning. She was a big actress for a while. Like she's real...
Emily Browning.
Emily Browning was in, what was that movie that with all those young girls?
Oh, Sucker Punch?
Yes. They use like a song in that too that they slowed down? I mean, this is very off topic from what I was talking about, but I just hate when, I guess it's not like other films haven't done it, is what I'm saying. I mean, they haven't borrowed from it, but I guess they didn't try to say, oh, look, we're original. And also, like, in a movie like this where they're borrowing so many elements, why not try to do something a little bit different?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that they did that. I mean, just because they took it from Vertigo, right?
Yes. I think they took from others, too.
Okay. I think it's really interesting that, you know, sort of like, I'm not comparing it to Mank, but Mank is just like the best example of how it's supposed to look like a movie from that time period. And then they do something like that when everything else is so meticulous. Like, because the Vertigo came out in like, what, 57, 58, 59? I don't know. Do I hear 60? But there was...
$1.
$1.
58, 58.
But you know, I think it's interesting that they use that music when everything is so meticulously period and stuff. So I don't know. I just think it's
funny. It's just weird. But I mean, I mean, it worked, obviously, since it won Academy Awards. People didn't mind too much. I mean, they have, like, Pennies from Heaven and stuff. Like, you're right. They have, like, stuff that's from the period more there. And then they have, like, throw in some Vertigo shit. But,
like, I like that. Can we use it?
But, yeah, those are, like, kind of my main things about it. I mean, I think looking, you know, back on it, I enjoyed it this time. I really, a lot more. Maybe it was because we didn't have the, like
that psychopath the homophobe
sitting with us. Yeah. But I just enjoyed it more.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. There's, I'm just going to say as a side note, Megan and I have had a lot of experiences where we are there almost completely alone. It's always us and, like, two other people, or us and one other person, and it becomes this insane experience. And that was, like, we went to I remember we went to go see a late show to go see this movie. It was in a small theater, at the AMC Waterfront.
Yes.
And we were in the stadium seating, literally the only people there, and she sits directly behind us.
Yeah, she did sit directly behind us. Yeah.
Directly behind us.
And then talked the entire time.
And talked. I remember one of the things you said when we were walking out, I think you said something like, oh, I haven't seen a silent movie in a long time. And I said, that wasn't silent. That bitch wouldn't stop talking.
Yeah, it was just the ultimate irony that we went to go see a silent film, and that there was definitely a talkie. George, you're not talking. We got somebody. This bitch in the audience will do that for you.
Like, this bitch is gonna take your job, George. Come on. Yeah. Yep, George.
Ugh. It was just it was a surreal experience, and maybe that did taint the experience. I mean, because we were so hyped up to see it, and then I do remember it being like I was cringing while watching it because it was just like, oh my god, shut the fuck up, quit talking.
Well, it's also because that sort of experience of seeing that type of movie, I mean, for somebody who, I mean, us at that age, like the what that came out in 2000, we saw it in 2012.
We were eight.
We were 8 years old. But, I mean, we had never experienced something sort of like that. So, I checked my stupid little book. We saw it after the new year. So, this is one of the movies that, you know how, before things were streaming and before we, like, worked for Awards Daily, before we got to see stuff ahead of time, you know, we would have to wait and see stuff, be like, when everybody else got to see it. You know, there's always, like, one or two holdover movies that come to theaters after the new year. Like, they wait for, you know, Oscar stuff. And us seeing this type of movie, I remember feeling this way. It was sort of, like, something that I've never experienced before. It's a brand new movie. It's not like we went to, like an art house theater and saw, like, you know, a silent film from 1928. This is, like, a brand new movie that everyone was talking about. And I remember in that theater, I mean, there's a score throughout the whole thing, but there are certain scenes where it's just literally silent, and it's just sort of like the modern sort of movie-going experience is not, I don't say not equipped for that, but it's so strange.
Yeah.
So you're right. When we have, you know, chatty motherfucking Kathy sitting behind us,
and she's like, just mumbling and talking to herself most of the time.
I was like, the tension, because the whole time I was like, she's going to talk. Yeah. It was sort of like knowing that someone's going to fart. It's just sort of like, okay, it's going to happen. It was like something, and it was just this motherfucker just talking the whole time.
And also to put it into context, Joey and I, you know, for years have, when we go to see, we knew this was the movie to beat. Like, we knew this was it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I always have a thing where we'll go see films together, and I'll turn to you and say, and the Oscar race begins now. And that'll be, like, right early, that's, like, in October, usually, when we see, like, the first buzzy movie. So this was, like, the last one of the time. Oscars are coming. We're getting ready. This is a big deal for us to see it. So for this bitch to ruin it for us, I remember feeling a huge sense of disappointment that she ruined that experience and also in the film. But I'm not sure now if, like, this is not a bad film at all. It's a very delightful film. I can see why people love it. I'm glad I watched it again and appreciate it more now. But our experience with it was pretty rotten, I would say. And bizarre. Yeah. Just bizarre.
It was strange. We have a
treasure trove of those type of experiences.
Yeah.
That maybe we'll turn into a podcast.
You need to figure that out because and it's not even exaggeration. I don't know. There's something about us having us going, I don't know if it's people have a target. There's a target on us. The sort of dozens of experiences that we have, I'm already thinking of I thought of just eight. I just thought of eight where it's just random strangers going to, being in the same space as us and we just happen to be there. That is probably the pinnacle of that. I actually think that since this movie, this movie's good, it's entertaining. I actually think it's it's obviously very nostalgic. It's very warm, blah, 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 blah. But I feel like I remember that experience sitting in that theater more than I do enjoying the movie.
Yes, I do too. I just remember the pain of sitting there and thinking, I waited all this time to see this. And I cannot enjoy it. Yes, because someone's going to fart and because she's just talking to herself and mumbling. And maybe we're not being fair to her. Maybe she's got issues though. Maybe she could have had mental health issues. Who knows? But at the same time, it is pretty fucking funny that we happened to go to a silent film in the modern era and somebody won't quit talking during it. When most people during the movies don't talk, sure there's people who are horror films where you're don't go in there and that kind of fun. But this was a film where you really should not be talking.
I want to say it was borderline commentary.
Yeah.
Because it was just I feel like I remember her saying something along the lines of she didn't like Berenice Bejo for some reason. I think that sticks in
Peppy.
My
mind. I love Peppy.
I know, but I feel like I do remember, because there have been a couple of experiences, I'll have to tell you offline about the one that I had when I went to go see The Assistant by myself.
Oh, dear.
I feel like I remember her saying something, anytime you saw Peppy doing something, I don't think she liked her. She was just ugh. I want to say she said something along the lines of, you're trying way too hard. I was all right, lady.
Ugh.
Lady.
Oh yeah, what an experience. But yeah, I'm glad we have seen it. We've now seen Uggie's, huge breakout film. I mean, he's had a lot of breakout. I think I probably say he has a breakout film every podcast. But this is the one that made him a household name, even though my dad still does not know who the dog is. But
no.
Yeah. But so our next film is we're gonna watch The Campaign with Zach Galifianakis and Will Ferrell, and this is Uggie's now, he's semi-retired. This is pre-retirement. I think this is his last film before he retires. So yeah, I'm excited. I love this film. So I'm excited to watch this one too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's, I feel like this is, since he's, is going towards his early, retirement, this is the dirty grandpa of his, of Uggie's career. Robert De Niro was doing that. Didn't he do a string of weird comedy?
I think he's still doing a string of those.
It's just okay, someone he did Analyze This and was you can do comedy, and was he just barges into his agent's office. He was remember that time that I could do comedy, and then he just signs on to the nearest script. So maybe that's what this is gonna feel like for Uggie.
Yeah,
we'll explore that next time.
Yes, next time, and we hope you'll go on this filmography journey of Uggie with us. We'll see you next time.